A Matter of Spirit, the Quarterly Justice Journal of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center, Summer 2010 issue on human trafficking.
Slavery, Our Demand and Our Response, by Sister Patrice Colletti. Sister Patrice Colletti is on the leadership team of the Sisters of the Divine Savior and co-founder of SAVE, Salvatorian Advocacy for Victims of Exploitation. Welcome to Slavery in the 21st Century. 27 million men, women, and children held against their will and used like a car or cow or a piece of machinery so their slaveholder can earn a profit. The profits from slavery today are huge. Human trafficking and slavery are the second most lucrative illegal enterprise after only drug trafficking. Owning a slave is easier today than ever before. The initial investment and overhead costs are low. The profit is high. Slaves are used until illness or age make them unprofitable. They are then discarded and replaced with new ones. Slaves today are disposable. This is real life. A healthy young male to work your fields, or a strong 12-year-old female to sell for sex, costs less than a used car. This was real life for nearly 100 middle-class teens from suburbs and rural towns, freed from a prostitution ring in Ohio, using interstate rest areas to sell their goods. This was real life for a young woman in Wisconsin, forced to work 20 years in domestic slavery for a respected husband and wife physician couple, finally freed after a tip to law enforcement. This is real life in your state and mine, in this country, and around the world. How can this be, you wonder? Aren't all of us created in the image and likeness of God? It is tempting to look at this evil and place the blame solely upon the slave's owners. After all, it's their fault, isn't it? Our demand. If only it was that simple. We forget that we exist in, and indeed are part of, a world where women and children are marginalized, where people are treated as commodities, and where profit is valued above all else. This is not only them out there. We ourselves demand cheap clothing, fresh fruit at all times at good prices, manufactured goods at the lowest possible cost, and services of every type at the very best bargain. We become desensitized to sex and violence. We begin to believe that the sexualization and portrayal of women as valuable only in certain clothes or with certain body shapes is the norm. Think this is not true? Shop for clothes for a 10-year-old girl, watch Dancing with the Stars, or even look around at church on Sunday and consider how young women and girls are dressed. The clothing itself is not the problem. It's that we so unquestionably accept the symbolism without awareness of what it says and teaches about the value of women and girls. Our own actions and values form the base for slavery's continuing growth without us ever realizing it. Our political and social policies exacerbate poverty and reinforce social and economic inequality. We invest in war, create forced migration, and deny equal access to education and meaningful employment opportunities. As painful as it is, our own consumerism and the social structures built upon the interests and wants of those who have power and resources, that would be most of us reading this publication, form a seemingly justified demand that makes human slavery and exploitation a tacitly acceptable business response. We demand, the market responds. We rarely consider the outcomes. Our response. It is easy to be overwhelmed with this almost invisible, very complex reality. We may feel guilty, yet we stumble with how to respond. We are tempted to say, I'm powerless to change things. However, we have a definite and defined role. Human slavery calls out for the very salvation promised by the gospel. The good news is focused right here and now, calling the entire world to liberation from exactly this type of oppression, placing both the suffering Jesus and the risen Christ in our midst. Recognizing and responding to the reality of slavery in our world is a locus for the inbreaking of the reign of God in this moment and place in human history. Salvation demands social justice. Archbishop Oscar Romero of El Salvador clearly articulated this link to the gospel, noting that the church would betray its own love for God and its fidelity to the gospel if it stopped being a defender of the rights of the poor, of every legitimate struggle to achieve a more just society that prepares the way for the true reign of God in history. The Hebrew prophets announced God's special love for the poor and called God's people to a covenant of love and justice. The life and words of Jesus Christ, who came to bring glad tidings to the poor, liberty to captives, recovery of sight to the blind, Luke 4:18-19, and who identified himself with the least of these, the hungry, and the stranger, Matthew 25:45, are fundamental to our way of life. This commitment to the poor, to those at the margins of our society, arises from the truth of what God has revealed to us. God is relational. Therefore, we who are made in God's image share this communal, social nature and are called to reach out and to build relationships of love and justice. Today's Abolition Movement. The abolition movement of our history books took conscience, courage, and a belief in doing what was right even against the laws and the norms of the day. Today's abolition movement calls us to nothing less. Our call is not easy. Slavery is politically, socially, and economically complex. A mere dozen years ago, we could probably claim ignorance. Today, this is simply impossible. Slavery forms the plots for CSI Miami and Law and Order and makes newspaper headlines every single day. Today, slavery is as close to us as the $12.95 blouse or shirt we wear, the steel in our cars made with pig iron mined by slaves, or the tomatoes in our stores harvested by men and women under the burden of debt bondage. Abolition of slavery requires an emancipation far more complex than that of the 1863 Emancipation Proclamation. It calls us to a faith response fully mindful of the unfolding of salvation in our midst. Abolition of slavery truly is too big for us alone. It calls us to participate deeply and completely in making the gospel real. Child soldiers rebuild their lives. The entire lifetimes of the young people of Gulu, Uganda, bordering Sudan, have been marked by armed conflict. Nearly 30,000 children have been abducted, many forced to become child soldiers. The new Oche Campion Jesuit College, a joint project of the Eastern African and Wisconsin Jesuit provinces, is one sign of hope in the region. For the past 4 years, local young adults, many of them former abductees and child soldiers, have been working to clear land and build the new secondary school. They have a wonderful spirit of ownership for the project, says Tony Wach, S.J. It's rebuilding people after 23 years of terrible insecurity. The first phase of the school opened in February.
Human Trafficking, a Community Issue, by Chris Kilmer. Chris Kilmer is the program coordinator for Catholic Charities of Oregon's Outreach and Support to Immigrant Populations Program and a member of the Oregon Human Trafficking Task Force. Ask your average American what they know about human trafficking, and the response will likely be something to the effect of, "You mean sex slaves in Thailand?" What few know is that human trafficking happens in our own communities and is not just forced prostitution. Human trafficking, simply put, is slavery. Ricardo's story. Take, for example, a case of Ricardo. While working in the fields near his village in Guatemala, Ricardo was approached by a recruiter who promised him work in the United States with a large salary, subsidized housing, and free meals. He was presented a contract, but it was in Spanish. Ricardo speaks Xinca, an indigenous language, and has never learned English or Spanish. A few months later, Ricardo received his passport and visa to go to the U.S. from the recruiter. He never heard from the recruitment company again. Upon arrival at a labor camp in Oregon, Ricardo's documents were taken from him. He was told he was to work 20 hours a day rather than the 10 he had been promised. Furthermore, he was told he owed the employer for money they paid the recruitment company. If he wanted to earn money, he would first have to work off $2,500 in fees for travel to the U.S. and the issuance of his visa. Adding insult to injury, Ricardo was told the trailer he lived in with 11 other migrant workers was not free, and that his living expenses was to be deducted from his paycheck. He would also have to pay for his own meals and could only buy food from the farm operator. Ricardo threatened to quit, but was told if he left, he would be deported and that he had no rights in the U.S. When Ricardo tried to leave, he was stopped by armed guards who said they would shoot him. He was beaten and told, "You are a dog. You must stay here." Unable to speak either English or Spanish, and afraid of the guards, Ricardo felt helpless. Stories similar to Ricardo's take place around the U.S. every day. Trafficking victims may be forced to work in private homes, the restaurant industry, or almost any business. Victims face threats of deportation or being reported to the police. Furthermore, they are often subjugated to extreme physical and sexual violence. Traffickers psychologically manipulate victims through emotional abuse and maintaining power and control over their victims. Then there are those forced into prostitution. Sophia's story. Take, for example, Sophia. Promised work in the Pacific Northwest, Sophia traveled from Oaxaca to the U.S. Sophia's trafficker arranged for her to be mugged before she left Mexico. Arriving at a safe house in Arizona, she was told that without money, she would need to prostitute herself to pay off her debt. Sophia's documents were taken away from her, and she was told if she tried to escape, they would kill her younger sister. When Sophia protested, she was brutally raped. Sophia was forced to work in a hotel near her safe house for 14 hours a day. Each night she was forced to have sex with 15 men in the hotel. She was told it was to pay off her debt. The horrors of sex trafficking are not limited to those who are brought into the United States. U.S. citizen children are trafficked on a daily basis around the country. These children are recruited by pimps in schools and malls. Such young women are often vulnerable due to homelessness, poverty, or trouble at home. The horror stories of trafficking victims all share a common thread. Each survivor will say, "I was a slave." Even after victims escape, it is a rough road to recovery. Precious few programs exist to provide services to victims. Furthermore, it is an uphill battle to keep services operating with limited funds from various government grants. For the victims, the process of putting such extraordinary trauma behind them is long and grueling, requiring years of mental health counseling. Undocumented victims must wait, often years, for their immigration paperwork to be processed. During that time, they are without the safety net of services U.S. citizens take for granted. Standing in solidarity. Yet hope springs eternal. Across the country, new laws have been passed increasing criminal penalties for traffickers, educating the community, and providing needed services to victims. Federal legislation continues to be improved, and a bill has recently been introduced in the Senate to direct funding towards shelters for domestic minor sex trafficking victims. Furthermore, a grassroots effort has developed to stop human trafficking and stem the demand for free labor. In the final analysis, we cannot end trafficking until we end the root cause of trafficking, the belief that human life can be bought and sold as a commodity. It would be convenient to believe that slavery was abolished with the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Tragically, slavery continues to exist. Human trafficking will continue to flourish until citizens demand an end to this blight on their community. Regardless of your faith or background, surely we can all stand together in solidarity behind the belief that slavery is wrong and must truly be abolished. A new crop of anti-trafficking legislation. Since the passage of the Federal Trafficking Victims Protection Act, or TVPA, in 2000, and the first state law in Washington State in 2003, new legislation has been introduced across the country. Recent successes include increased penalties. In Colorado, adding human trafficking to the Organized Crime Act, April 2010. In Washington, increasing penalties for buyers of sex and traffickers. April 2010. Community education. In Oregon, requiring a posting of hotline information in businesses serving alcohol. March 2010. In Pennsylvania, a law establishing an advisory committee on trafficking. April 2010. Survivor services. In Washington, a law developing services for child victims of sex trafficking. April 2010.
Could I Have a Human Trafficking Footprint? By Judy Byron, OP. Judy Byron, OP, is the program director of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center and the coordinator of the Northwest Coalition for Responsible Investment. Shortly after being born, we imprint our birth certificates with our first footprints, tiny feet that throughout our lives will leave a footprint on our global community. In response to climate change, we become aware of our carbon footprint. When faced with the fact that 1.1 billion people do not have access to clean water, we begin to calculate our water footprint. In our efforts to be responsible consumers, we can ask ourselves, do I have a human trafficking footprint? Clothing. When I put on my shirt this morning, did I wonder where the cotton was grown and harvested? Could it have been Uzbekistan, the third largest exporter of cotton in the world? Did I know that every autumn the government orders that schools be closed and that hundreds of thousands of students and their teachers go to the fields to pick cotton for 2 months? Here the children, some of whom are as young as 7, are exposed to pesticides, inadequately housed, suffer injuries, and are punished for not picking their quotas. What can I do about this trafficking of children? While most clothing labels indicate the country in which the product was made, very few indicate where the cotton was grown. Since 2007, the Northwest Coalition for Responsible Investment has been a member of a coalition of shareholders working with retailers to condemn the use of forced child labor and to refuse to sell products containing Uzbek cotton. Individuals can join this effort by reading Slave Nation, State-Sponsored Forced Child Labor in Uzbekistan's Cotton Fields, and then by asking companies to ensure that what they sell is clearly labeled with the country of origin of the cotton fiber. Produce. What do my food choices tell me about my human trafficking footprint? Perhaps I already look for the fair trade label guaranteeing that the grower of my coffee was paid a fair price. But what about the human trafficking footprint of the low-cost produce I search for in the weekly ads? Do I consider the farm workers and the conditions of their employment? The Coalition of Maklé Workers, CIW, a community-based organization working to eliminate modern-day slavery conditions from Florida agriculture, focuses its efforts on the major food-buying corporations. Its first victory was with Taco Bell, a campaign of several years that resulted in the company agreeing to improve the wages and working conditions for Florida tomato pickers. This gave the CIW the impetus to persuade fast food companies, McDonald's, Burger King, and Subway, to sign the Fair Food Agreement. Whole Foods was the first company in the supermarket industry to agree to work with the CIW, and this April, the food service giant Aramark signed the agreement. Individuals can work in partnership with the CIW by joining the Alliance for Fair Food to advocate for socially responsible purchasing in the corporate food industry. On the local level, consumers can reduce their footprint by buying local, seasonal food directly from farmers through community-supported agriculture, CSA, or farmers' market. Chocolate. We are delighted to read the news that dark chocolate is healthy chocolate. But what about the other headline, the dark side of chocolate? Behind that headline are the faces of 1 million children employed in dangerous and abusive conditions in the West African cocoa farming sector. An estimated 200,000 to 800,000 children are trafficked there each year. In 2001, Representative Elliot Engel and Senator Tom Harkin responded to reports about the abuse of children in cocoa farming by introducing legislation to require a no-child slavery label on chocolate products sold in the United States. Instead, the chocolate industry agreed to the Harkin-Engel Protocol, which committed them to develop and implement certification standards to guarantee that their cocoa beans are grown and processed without child labor. Almost 10 years later, just as we were enjoying our chocolate Easter eggs, BBC aired Chocolate, the Bitter Truth. A reporter posing as a cocoa dealer found evidence of child trafficking and labor in the cocoa supply chain in West Africa. Since assessments continue to indicate that not enough progress has been made on eliminating child labor, is it time to acknowledge that the protocol is a failure and label the chocolate? Now is the time to move Hershey, Mars, and Nestle beyond the No Child Slavery label to the Fair Trade label, which supports the livelihoods of farmers and the well-being of children. We can all write to the chocolate manufacturers and tell them, like this eighth-grade student at St. Anthony's School, "I absolutely love all the products that your company produces, but my hatred of slavery outweighs it. I know how wrong it is, and I'm prepared to stop purchasing any product that was produced by a slave."
From Risk to Safety: Domestic Minor Sex Trafficking, by Terry Kimball. Terry Kimball is the director of the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Prevention Division for the City of Seattle. $293,000 American youth are currently at risk of becoming victims of commercial sexual exploitation, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. Meanwhile, the average age of entry into prostitution today is just 11 to 13. In most states, children who become involved in prostitution are arrested. They are taken to juvenile detention, where they may be charged with juvenile prostitution, a low-level misdemeanor crime. However, most are released a few days later, often to return to their pimps and the life. Victims of crime and exploitation. The legal response to youth involved in prostitution is beginning to shift. They are victims of crime and exploitation by others. Police, advocates, and outreach workers observe that most youth involved in prostitution, mostly girls under the age of 18, were first pimped shortly after they hit the streets. Once under the control of their pimps, some of whom are gang members, they are controlled through beatings and intimidation, with all of their earnings taken by the pimp. They may be forced to engage in 10 to 12 sex acts with different men each day and required to meet a monetary quota imposed by the pimp. It is very hard for a youth involved in prostitution to escape her exploiters, even if she wants to. And she may not want to. As difficult as her life may be with the pimp, it may seem better, safer, and more predictable than when she was alone on the street. Many American victims of commercial sexual exploitation are runaway or thrown away youth who live on the streets. They may come from homes where they have been abused or abandoned. I never met my father. When I was 14, my mother was arrested and jailed for beating me. Between the time I was 14 and 16, I was in 17 different placements throughout the child welfare system. I finally ran away for good when I was 16. The only possession I had that mattered to me was my cell phone. I owed $300 on the bill, and they were ready to cut it off. I decided I could make quick money. My first time out, I made $150. Then I got picked up by a pimp. 19-year-old witness statement in a pimp trial. Services and safety. The moral, legal, and ethical dilemma for criminal justice responders is that if they don't arrest youth involved in prostitution, they will stay in the hands of their exploiters. Often, law enforcement's only option is to arrest youth with the hope that they will gain safety and access to services. The problem, however, is that the services are very limited. According to the 2009 National Report on Domestic Minor Sex Trafficking, only 5 residential facilities specific to this population currently exist. A new residential program will open in Seattle, Washington, in June 2010. The new program is in response to a study commissioned by the city government, which identified the need to create a safe, structured residential recovery program for youth involved in prostitution. The program will be provided by Youth Care, a local nonprofit agency under contract with the City of Seattle. All youth entering the program will receive wraparound services to address their every need. Staff will assist the youth to set and achieve their personal goals, including education, housing, and employment. We are optimistic that this program will provide a much-needed option for law enforcement and outreach workers, and wonderful results for these very deserving youth. Protective shelters for child sex trafficking victims. The Girls Educational and Mentoring Services in New York City. Standing Against Sexual Exploitation in San Francisco. Children of the Night in Los Angeles. Angela's House in Atlanta. And the Latot Center in Dallas.
New Abolitionist Movement by Erin Murphy. Erin Murphy is the policy director for the Seattle Against Slavery Coalition. A double master's student, Erin is studying public policy and international studies at the University of Washington. I am an abolitionist. It may sound like a thing of the past, yet slavery thrives today. With over 27 million slaves in our world, more than the entire Atlantic slave trade 200 years ago, the need for an abolitionist movement is greater now than ever. The enormity of human trafficking is overwhelming. However, when I connect to others in my community, I feel hope. As a part of the new anti-human trafficking coalition in my community, I am directly connected to attorneys, social service providers, politicians, professors, faith leaders, and others who advocate for change. Anti-human trafficking coalitions are surfacing in cities all around the United States. Coalitions have inspired 3 exciting new developments: localizing the issue, building inclusive bridges, and advocating for domestic structural change. Localizing the issue. Images of young girls in Cambodia forced to prostitute themselves elicit strong reactions of horror and outrage. Yet, similar stories in the U.S. are often met with even greater disbelief, as the perceived far-off atrocities are brought close to home. When slavery becomes visible in your backyard, it is impossible to ignore. In my own city, There are certain street corners I can no longer pass in daylight without envisioning the girls who I know will crowd that corner in the early morning hours. American girls suffering emotional manipulation and coercion, leading them to sell their bodies. The closer the issue is to home, the more sense of responsibility to act grows. By emphasizing the local nature of slavery, we see and hear the issue all around us, motivating us to advocate for change. Building inclusive bridges. Social justice coalitions are most powerful when they channel diverse collective power, harnessing a variety of skills and efforts into a united movement. They can inspire all members of a community to active participation. It is an opportunity to build bridges between common divides, such as liberal and conservative, or religious and secular. One way coalitions build collective inclusive power is by encouraging all members to be activists and leaders. This approach particularly benefits young people who often find mentors within the coalition. Advocating for domestic structural change. Structural change is the most effective way to address the root of human trafficking. Government policies shape the way in which law enforcement and social service providers address trafficking. Citizens can greatly influence those policies. The California Coalition to Abolish Slavery championed Assembly Bill 22 in 2005 to comprehensively address the three P's: prosecution, protection, and prevention. The New York Anti-Trafficking Coalition saw their advocacy efforts rewarded when SB 502 was enacted in 2007, making it easier to convict traffickers. The Seattle Against Slavery Coalition advocated for legislation that shifts responsibility from prostituted minors to buyers and traffickers. Signed by the governor in April 2010, SB 6476 focuses on child protection and nearly triples fines for traffickers and buyers. We are an abolitionist movement, and we are working to end human trafficking. Join us and help to end slavery in our world, one city at a time. Truck Stop Campaign. Truck drivers are in a unique position to spot human trafficking. As they transport goods to market, traffickers are driving the same highways to transport victims across state lines. Traffickers also market their services to truck drivers, who often stay overnight at truck stops. The Defenders USA, a coalition of men working to end the demand for human trafficking, has organized a campaign to educate truck drivers about the reality of human trafficking. Some are surprised at the depth of violence perpetrated against the victims or their ages, said Defender Larry Hawley of Miami, Florida. Others are happy to see someone bringing visibility to the issue, as they encounter it frequently at truck stops.
Stop the Demand, a Reflection Process. Invite a small group for reflection and conversation about human trafficking. Ask them to read the issue prior to the gathering. Adapt the process according to your group's needs, reflecting on one or all of the questions. You may also wish to use the prayer on the back page. Human traffickers use force, fraud, or coercion to exploit other human beings for profit or pleasure. In all forms of human trafficking, traffickers rely on society's demand for their product. In our conversation together, we will explore how we participate in or support systems that demand human trafficking. Take a few moments to read over the following questions, inspired by this issue of Amos. After the reflection, I will invite us into a conversation about ways we might be called, collectively and individually, to work for an end to human trafficking. Reflection questions. A quote by Judy Byron. Perhaps I already look for the fair trade label, guaranteeing that the grower of my coffee was paid a fair price. But what about the human trafficking footprint of the low-cost produce I search for in the weekly ads? How often do you look for the fair trade label? What changes could you make in your shopping habits, such as buying local and seasonal food? A quote by Patrice Colletti. We become desensitized to sex and violence. We begin to believe that the sexualization and portrayal of women as valuable only in certain clothes or with certain body shapes is the norm. Do you see signs of the commodification of women and girls in the marketplace? What contributes to this environment? How might you act individually or collectively to shift this cultural view? A quote by Aaron Murphy. Government policies shape the way in which law enforcement and social providers address trafficking. Citizens can greatly influence those policies. As a faithful citizen, do you consider human trafficking a priority for legislative action? How is human trafficking connected to other issues, such as poverty, economic justice, and globalization? Reflection to action. After reading this issue of Amos, what change or heart or movement towards action have you experienced? Survivors speak out. Survivors of human trafficking often find that it's difficult to tell the stories of their enslavement. At the Coalition to Abolish Slavery and Trafficking in Los Angeles, California, survivors are finding their voice through the Survivor Advocacy Caucus. This program empowers survivors to speak publicly on behalf of all victims of trafficking. Survivors testify at public hearings and community events to raise awareness and advocate for stronger laws and services. I did not feel hopeful of what my future was going to be because I could not see what was going to happen tomorrow, says Lulu, a survivor of trafficking. Now I feel hopeful. I can dream.
Prayer for conversion of heart. Human trafficking. Set up chairs around a small table with a cloth, candle, and basket of small stones. Let us begin by observing a moment of silence in solidarity with the more than 27 million men, women, and children in slavery-like conditions today. Human trafficking can be an overwhelming reality, but we must not forget that our God is bigger. A reading from the book of Ezekiel. A new heart I will give you, and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will remove from your body the heart of stone, and give you a heart of flesh. Let us pray that God will convert the hearts of all human traffickers. Our response will be, give them hearts of flesh. For those who have become so hardened that human suffering no longer tugs on their hearts, give them hearts of flesh. For those so long consumed with greed that they no longer recognize the inherent value of the human person, give them hearts of flesh. For those so caught up in seeking pleasure that they buy sex or exploit other human beings. Give them hearts of flesh. Let us pray for all of us who participate in systems that continue the demand for human trafficking. Our response will be, give us hearts of flesh. That we will change our consumer choices and habits to promote fairly traded products. Give us hearts of flesh. That we will demand corporate responsibility and slave-free products and services. Give us hearts of flesh. That we will challenge others when they use language that demeans or objectifies women and girls. Give us hearts of flesh. Let us end by taking a few moments of quiet to reflect on this question. What prayer of conversion is stirring in my heart? I now invite each of you to take a stone from the basket. As you take your stone, share one word or phrase that reflects the stirring of your heart. And we close with this prayer. Loving God, we take these stones home, both as a reminder of your promise to us and of our commitment to pray for an end to human trafficking. We ask for conversion of heart for all human traffickers and for courage to recognize and respond to our own role in society's demand for human trafficking. We pray this in solidarity with all victims of human trafficking. Amen.
Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. Building Community, Creating Change. Our Benefit Dinner. Thank you to everyone who joined us on April 22nd to celebrate, support, and sustain the ministry of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. We honored the following community builders. In our church, we can be confident that the Roman Catholic Church is in good hands with Tricia Whitman Todd leading a parish where everyone is welcomed and honored. Her preaching is always an invitation to transformation. On Easter Sunday, when the children were baptized, she enthusiastically challenged us to live our baptismal call to be priest, prophet, and king. Royalty, she proclaimed, is a call to share and redistribute wealth. Prophecy, a call to share power. And priesthood, she preached, is the call we all received to share responsibility for the life and care of the community. When given the choice of retiring or ministering in an inclusive Vatican II church community, Father Patrick Clark chose to give his all to empowering lay leadership and making our church life-giving. He is a lifelong educator and learner, a priest who calls us to bring our diverse perspectives and theologies to the dialogue as we imagine and create a renewed church. In our world, for Kate and Ralph Maughan, opening their hearts to the needs of the global community took them to Nicaragua, where they worked in an orphanage which is a home for children who live in conditions of extreme poverty. A partnership with Marinol in Thailand and Burma found them installing solar panels and working in an AIDS hospice. These days, they can be found at St. Mary's Food Bank, caring for those in need in our local community, or at IPJC, fixing a faucet or trimming our jungle. Young adults. In the summer of 1999, as a young high school junior, Hilda Guayo took the plunge, IPJC's Seattle Urban Plunge, a week-long immersion experience of urban poverty, social analysis, and community building. Thus began her quest, which has led her to pursue a degree in theology and to partner with IPJC to build diverse communities through leadership in plunges, women's justice circles, and justice cafes. If you registered online for the Northwest Catholic Women's Convocation or used our website, you have benefited from Abhishek Gupta's generous giving of time and talent. He has applied the skills and expertise he gained through his work at Microsoft to help launch IPJC into the 21st century communication. Truly, he is committed to supporting community-based global change through technology. Sister Diana Bader had this to say of IPJC's benefit dinner. Applause and gratitude for the great celebration. It was an inspiring show of solidarity among all of us there, and an opportunity for us to see the evidence of your continuing efforts to further peace and justice, not only in the Northwest, but throughout the world. Take IPJC into the future. Build community, create change. Participate in your company matching program. United Way designation, write in IPJC. Consider a living trust. Designate IPJC in estate planning or will. Give a gift of stock. Donate in honor or memory of a significant person in your life. Women's Justice Circles. Justice for Women newsletter can be found at www.ipjc.org. Spring highlights from 11 circles. Seattle. Sojourners addressed housing discrimination in a presentation to the Seattle Human Rights Commission. In Lima, Peru, at Centro Maria Rosa, creating green spaces. In Everett, Spanish Educational Forum on Dating Violence. In Spokane, at St. Margaret's Shelter, organized a bus stop change. In Prosser, organized a Spanish language interactive workshop on finance. Thank you, Leah. Thank you to Leah Aroman, our University of Washington School of Social Work intern. Leah facilitated women's justice circles, organized advocacy events, and supported our justice cafes for young adults. Stop the Demand from Seattle to Trinidad. IPJC's work to stop the demand continues to build momentum. We gather the first Sunday of the month for a silent prayer vigil in Westlake Park, downtown Seattle, at 1:30 p.m. Monthly vigils also take place in Jonestown, Mississippi, Los Gatos, California, as well as Spokane and Tacoma, Washington. Contact IPJC for a toolkit to start a vigil in your community. The Stop the Demand bus ad campaign will launch in Pierce County, Tacoma, on Father's Day. Contact IPJC for information on starting a bus ad in your city. The Northwest Coalition for Responsible Investment signed on to letters to hotels and sponsors of the World Cup in South Africa this June, alerting them to patterns and opportunities for sex and labor trafficking at such events. IPJC volunteers connect to the larger movement. Liz B. Mumford leaves this month for India, where she will coordinate aftercare services with Made by Survivors. Corti Stanton was selected to attend the Unanima Youth Workshop in New York with young adults from the global community. Our website allows us to broaden our outreach with 4,000 downloads of human trafficking resources in the past year. Our high school workshop was presented in Port of Spain, Trinidad, as part of National Safety Week. The principal liked it and wants it to be presented to all the students in the school, says Gloria Snows, public safety officer. IPJC is a partner with Seattle Against Slavery, a new grassroots coalition. In May, we participated in the first ecumenical freedom prayer gathering with other Christians from Protestant, evangelical, and emerging churches. It was a wonderful opportunity to build bridges in the work to end human trafficking. Saturday, July 10th, 2010, public witness against human trafficking in Portland, Oregon. At South Park Blocks, Shemansky Park, 3 o'clock p.m., located at Southwest Salmon Street and Southwest Park Avenue. Sponsored by the Sisters of the Holy Names and co-sponsored by the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center.
A Matter of Spirit is a publication of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. Our editorial board for this issue was Judy Byron, OP, Anthony Naharaja, PhD, Gretchen Gundrum, PhD, Linda Haydock, SNJM, Vince Herberholt, Pat Higgins, and Beth Taylor, CSJP. Our editor was Susan Francois, CSJP. The print version was laid out by Michael Schwindeller. This audio version has been read by Patty Leanweber, Michael Schwindeller, Pat Daly, Diane Ahern, Judy Heasley, and Susan Francois. The Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center is sponsored by the Adrian Dominican Sisters, Oregon Province Jesuits, Sisters of the Holy Names of Jesus and Mary, U.S. Ontario Province, Sisters of Providence, Mother Joseph Province, Sisters of St. Francis of Philadelphia, Sisters of St. Joseph of Peace, and the Tacoma Dominicans. Our affiliate communities are the Benedictine Sisters of Cottonwood, Idaho, the Benedictine Sisters of Lacey, the Benedictine Sisters of Mount Angel, the Religious of the Sacred Heart, Sinsinawa Dominicans, Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet, Sisters of St. Mary of Oregon, and the Ursuline Sisters of the Roman Union. To learn more about the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center, visit our website, www.ipjc.org.